There's a river somewhere. So much needs fixing around the globe.
Do you draw the line
and next door?
You and I. All that's broken on the river.
It is time for We Act Radio's Conversations Toward Repair. Welcome. This is We Act Radio, broadcasting from historic Anacostia, Washington, D.C., on land that was once home to Nacochtank people, sometimes called Anacostan, who were displaced within about 40 years of Europeans arriving. And Anacostia now faces displacement again as new, more upmarket building takes the place of longstanding residents and businesses. Displacement and gentrification is just one form of structural violence considered in this series, Conversations Toward Repair. I am Virginia Avniel Spatz, and my intention in this series is to focus on undoing violence by exploring the many forms of violence embedded in our city, nation, and globe that frequently go unremarked, maybe unnoticed, and by highlighting many ways of building peace that are currently underway and other things that people are exploring. For those new to the show, I am a woman with short, straight gray hair, fair skin, generally called white in this country. I'm wearing plastic rimmed glasses and kind of hoping I don't look as worn out as I feel this morning. Today's broadcast is intended to highlight one particular issue in the DC budget process, an issue that became public on January 5th, and we only have until January 20th for the DC Council to respond to it. So I am providing some information today, and we will continue following this issue. And there are more people who are expert in this particular budget issue who are providing me with background, and we will continue reporting on it. Before we launch into this week's topic, though, I do want to acknowledge some of the history of things that bring us to this day and this place, as well as some of the challenges and sorrows that we face right now. DC has lost 5 people to homicide in these few days of 2023. Among them were 2 adult shooting victims, Benji Byers and Terry Clark. Also 17-year-old Martez Tony, 13-year-old Carone Blake, and 36-year-old Jasmine Star Mack, a transgender woman, and the only stabbing victim. All the rest were killed with guns. Each story involves different forms of structural violence, and We Act Radio already posted some information about Carone Blake's story, and we continue to follow it. I note that the GoFundMe for the Blake family has actually surpassed its original goal, but it is still collecting funds for that bereaved family. Meanwhile, the Tony family needs funds to relocate following the death of 17-year-old Tez on January 2nd. That GoFundMe is far short of its goal and will be linked from our website. Please consider supporting that family if you are in a position to do so. And finally, before getting into our budget topic, I want to provide some historical notes. January 1st marked the 100th anniversary of the Rosewood Massacre, in which Black residents of a rural Florida town were killed and the town entirely destroyed by a mob of white people. Journalist Gary Moore's efforts years later, many years later, in 1982, to share survivors' stories led to some compensation for property loss for those people who were still surviving and greater awareness of the event. Today is the death anniversary of civil rights leader Vernon Dahmer, killed in 1966. On January 6, 1966, he announced on the radio that he would pay poll taxes for anyone who could not afford to register to vote. Although the Civil Rights Act was already in place, there were places that still had poll taxes. The next day, January 10th, his home was firebombed by the Ku Klux Klan. He guarded the front door while his wife and children escaped and then died the following day from smoke inhalation and severe burns. Today is also the anniversary of the launch of the Lawrence, Massachusetts textile strike in 1912, which resulted in some change of working conditions and an example of successful resistance to management, as well as the inspirational poem and song, Bread and Roses. And in honor of that occasion, I thought I would share, if possible, the DC Labor Chorus singing Bread and Roses a few years ago. I'm not always successful at sharing my screen properly, but I'm going to see if it is possible to do that. And just give me one moment to see if I can get this open here. And I think it's going to work. I hope the sound comes through. Let me give this a try. So that was the DC Labor Chorus from, I believe it was 2018, singing Bread and Roses, which, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, came out of the strike that is sometimes called the Bread and Roses strike, and sometimes called Bread and Roses, sometimes called the Lawrence, Massachusetts textile strike, and really is, the song is still inspirational and used very often, and that the strike and the other two examples that I raised of historical events are things that I think it behooves us to remember as we try to address our current challenges, that there have been examples of resistance and repair, and that we can sometimes turn to those for inspiration and for helping us develop new ways, new approaches for our current troubles. And I do think that as we try to do this kind of work, it is important that we acknowledge the weight of the kinds of grief that I began with that weighs so heavily, if unevenly, on our town and far beyond. So with that, I do want to get to the news topic that I want to highlight for this briefer than usual broadcast. I want to make sure that all listeners in DC and anyone who actually cares about the district, and also just wants another example of how there's a lot of things we need to be paying attention to if we are going to try to address some of the structural problems that persist in our town and beyond. So the mayor of the District of Columbia requested reprogramming of funds. And that's a pretty normal thing. The budget assumes a number of costs, and sometimes something runs over and something else is in need of less funds. It's pretty common for reprogramming requests. But this one was from DC's Department of Human Services to the Metropolitan Police Department. It would take funds that had been budgeted for temporary housing of families and move those funds to the MPD to cover cost overruns in construction of a police impound, the car impound lot. And I do want to start by thanking Defund MPD Coalition for noticing this announcement that was shared through the council's regular website. They shared it on January 5th, and the coalition let the public know that this was happening, because otherwise these kinds of things can easily slide by. The shift of funding will be deemed approved if no disapproval resolution is introduced by January 20th. This matter was passed along to the Housing Committee and to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety. So I inquired of the chairs of both committees, as well as other members of those committees, and the council members in wards listed as losing the most funds in the shift. And here's what they had to say. The office of Brooke Pinto, who is council member for Ward 2, chair of the Judiciary Committee, which oversees MPD, who will gain money, and a member of the Housing Committee, which oversees the department that will be losing money in this shift. Her office said, Councilmember Pinto is reviewing the mayor's request closely, but has no immediate plans to introduce a motion at this point in time. The office of Robert White, who is another at-large council member, and he is chair of the Housing Committee, his office said Councilmember White has not made a decision regarding a disapproval resolution, and we are currently unaware of other committee members planning to put forward a disapproval resolution. Christina Henderson, who is another at-large council member and on the Judiciary Committee, was just unavailable for comment. I did hear back from the office of Matthew Fruman, who is a new council member from Ward 3. And his office said that he is still awaiting additional information and wasn't ready to comment. In addition, Zachary Parker, who is the new council member for Ward 5 and also on the housing committee, similarly said that his office hadn't had time to make a decision, but they said this matter is under consideration. I am examining what potential impacts this transfer could have on Ward 5 residents and interests. Now, the person who gave me the most full response was Brienne Nadeau, council member for Ward 1. And she said, we have learned that the funds being reprogrammed are the excess funding from all of the short-term family housing projects. My understanding is that the projects the funds were intended for came in under budget and are completed and paid for. These are capital funds and can only be used for capital projects. They are not needed for any DHS projects, and their reprogram will not impact operations of Ward 1 short-term family housing. While I do have questions about the overruns at the MPD impound lot, I do not see this as having a direct impact on families in Ward 1. Charles Allen, council member for Ward 6, where $1 million of the funds to the $2.5 million to be reprogrammed, and also a member of the Judiciary Committee, did not respond to our query as far as I know. If I do hear back, I will forward that response. Now, sources familiar with the budget and the projects involved agree that the short-term family housing sites are complete and operating from what we understand. However, the funding could be shifted to redevelopment of shelters for single individuals, which are dilapidated and not designed well. There are other projects that would be closer to the mission of temporary housing for families that this $2.5 million, if it really is truly surplus, could be shifted to. And the mayor could have identified other unspent capital funding to cover the overrun at the impound lot instead of taking money for a place that houses cars that have been dragged off the street and taking it away from people who are in need of shelter. Regardless of the actual specifics of the $2.5 million, it does seem like it is sending a message that people who are in need of housing, or just people in general, aren't as important as some projects like the constant request for more funds to go to the police department in one way or another, even though this is a capital project for building the impound lot. So this story is one that I'm following. I have a number of people who are interested in the budget and who are much more knowledgeable than I am, who will be providing information in the next couple of days, and we will continue to share that with you as it becomes available. And of course, we will be in a new budget season before long, and budget questions are always at hand. And budget is how we determine how our values will be implemented in the world or not. And I did say that I was going to have a shorter than usual broadcast this time, because all of the guests that I had lined up had one or another conflict and were not able to have a thorough conversation right now. I did want to make sure that this issue just isn't swept under the rug or forgotten about, because we do have maybe $2.5 million is not a lot of money in the grand scheme of things, but it's money that could be helping people who are in need of shelter, and instead it just is going to if this is deemed approved, the council does have until the 20th to introduce a disapproval motion, and you are of course welcomed and encouraged to let your council members know what you think about this particular reprogramming and if you would like them to consider a disapproval motion, and if you would like the general budgeting process and the mayor's office to find a different way to cover the overruns. And as Council Member Nadeau pointed out, there are probably some questions that need to be asked about the impound lot itself and why it ran over. So the current plan, all of the information is available on the council's website, the information that was given by the mayor's office to the council, and it shows which project overruns would be transferred to the impound lot. And the one thing that I noticed and why I checked in with particular council members is that the money is coming from $1 million would come from Ward 1, which is Brianne Nadeau's ward. $133,000 or $134,000 would be coming from Ward 3. There are smaller amounts for some of the other wards, and Ward 6 would have close to $1 million also removed from the budget for these projects. Which, as I said, people do say that the projects themselves that they were originally budget have been the projects that were originally budgeted are complete, but as some sources close to the DC budget process have pointed out, there are other needs in our shelter system and in our housing system, which could have been supported by this $2.5 million. And we do have many, many issues in our housing, in our housing department, in public housing, in our vouchers, in pretty much every way that we try to support people who have been living on the streets. We have places where that money might be better spent. You can learn about it. It's a reprogramming request 25-0002, and you can find it on the council's website, and I will post the information on We Act Radio's blog as well. And before we end the broadcast, I do want to mention a couple of other things that are going on in the city and are related to We Act Radio. One exciting bit of news is that We Act Radio's co-founder, Kimone Freeman, has written and is soon to launch a book called Nineveh, A Conflict Over Water. And in fact, there is a pre-order event with the author, Kimone Freeman, and Dr. Khadija Ali Coleman of the Hurston Wright Foundation. That will be held January 16th on MLK Day from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Sankofa Books and Video Store. You can find a RSVP link at ninevanovel.com. And that's Nineveh is, since it is a word from the Hebrew Bible, it is transliterated in a number of different ways. So I will give the full spelling here, which is N-I-N-E-V-E-H, and then novel.com. So you can look it up at ninevanovel.com and find out more about the book. There's a lot of information there about the book and about the underlying issue of water scarcity, and you can find out about the event, which is this coming MLK Day at Sankofa Books and Video. And I also want to mention that rereading Exodus along the Anacostia, which was written by myself and published by We Act Radio's partner organization, the Sharnice Milton Community Bookstore, is also available now locally, and you can get it in ebook or print on demand through Lulu. And you can visit welovebooks.org for that information about getting the book directly. Sorry, I can't talk and also like try to create this little banner. I was going to give you a banner so you can, those who are watching on video can see the spelling. And for those who are on audio only, it's welovebooks.org, welovebooks.org. So those are two publications that are related to We Act Radio and one event that is coming up this weekend. And I do hope that those who are nearby will check that out, and there will be other events as the book is, this is a pre-order event for Nineveh. And the once the book is out, there will be other events, and I think there will be an author tour beyond DC. Right now there are no plans for a tour beyond DC for rereading Exodus along the Anacostia, but we have had some Zoom events, and maybe we will have more in the future. And before finally just closing out here, as I said, this is going to be a briefer than usual broadcast. I just wanted to make sure that we got that that one issue out into the public before it drifts away. I do want to also make sure that people who are concerned about housing and how we use our money in DC, and for people who maybe don't live here but also just want to understand how these things work, I broadcasted a couple of weeks ago about the DC Council's decision to give the what had been the Boys and Girls Club on Massachusetts Avenue Southeast, to give it to a developer for next to nothing. I don't actually have the amount of money in front of me. I think it's a dollar. And we talked at some length about how that project does not provide what had originally been promised for it. And I do encourage people who are interested to look up the racial equity reports that our tax dollars go to supporting the Council Office of Racial Equity, who do careful considerations of the various pieces of legislation as if there's enough time. Sometimes there isn't enough time between when something is introduced and when the vote happens. But there are reports that really are worth looking at, because we have repeatedly as a city given away property, called it surplus, when there's really no such thing as surplus land. Land, we only have a finite amount of it, and we should be using our land for things that really further our goals as a city. Our stated goals are to include making affordable housing, which is related to the reason that we have so many people who are struggling with homelessness. And if you look at these reports, each one of them for the Boys and Girls Club, for Hill East Bundle 1, Hill East Bundle 2, and also for the Malcolm X project, the office consistently said that much more could or should have been done to make these projects support the goal of affordable housing for those most in need. And since their charge is to look into what will be the effect for Black and Latinx residents in particular In each case, they say that the improvement will be negligible or it simply will not improve things. And we gave our land away for this. So with that, I will close this broadcast. And as I said, I will be bringing you more information as soon as possible from sources who are informed about housing needs and about the budget process. And in the meanwhile, thanks for listening. Peace.